Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And welcome to Two Words Wolf Pod. I'm Ryan Agden, and with me tonight is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm alive. I'm happy to be here. We have a lot of high winds and hot weather picking up here in LA, which is always scary. We already had the really wild Palisades fire earlier this year, and so I think anytime the wind really picks up and it's hot, it gets a little scary out here. But aside from that, I'm doing okay. Ryan, anything going on with you on this? We're recording Tuesday night.
Nope, not really. Compared to you, it's a beautiful fall day in Minnesota. It's kind of my favorite weather. The like 50 degrees and cold, not too windy, where it's sweater weather. It's my type of weather where if you get. Obviously, we'll get into the snow and cold eventually here, and the summers can be hot and humid. So the weather up here is right in that nice sweet spot.
Nice. Yeah. Before we jump into Wolf stuff, I do have to officially on air tip my hat. I'm tipping my hat to Ryan for beating me in our opening week of fantasy basketball. Just to give you a very, very quick description of it, we are in a keeper league. Ryan joined my family and friends keeper league, and he essentially drafted the tank this year, and he used some early mid rounds on drafting Tyrese Halliburton and Jason Tatum, who are out for the year, so he kind of has a half functional team, and he still kicked my butt pretty thoroughly. So again, fair play. I really can't say much about it, but congrats, Ryan. You got the victory on week one over me.
Yeah, not sure how often that'll happen, but Aaron Gordon scoring 50 points is obviously that'll do that, I guess. And my one good top player, Steph, played well as well. But
yeah.
Yep, it's always no one plays fantasy basketball. That's kind of what I've learned is no one. There's very few fantasy basketball. Obviously, fantasy football dominates the fantasy world, and I enjoy fantasy football too. But there are very few people that play fantasy basketball, because baseball is the original fantasy sport, so there's still probably plenty of baseball players, but fantasy basketball kind of gets the short straw, which is fine, because you can kind of dominate if you know what you're doing. But let's go from there to hop into the Wolves. Since we last did an episode, or Travis and I did an episode after the season opening win in Portland, lots changed honestly since then. The defense continues to hemorrhage points. They can't really defend anyone. And Anthony Edwards is now going to miss about 2 weeks, is the projection. Reevaluated in 1 week, 1 week from Monday, is his reevaluation date. I'd imagine, I don't know if it's worth really discussing, like breaking down when he'll come back. My guess would be 2 weeks would be Monday, November 10th against Utah. I would imagine that is not a likely return date. I would more guess they have a 4-day break until Friday, November 14th against Sacramento. I think that would be the date that would be a good case scenario for him to come back. If they don't want to play him in a back-to-back, home-home back-to-back right off, maybe they sit him one more night against Sacramento, and Saturday, November 15th against Denver is when he comes back, but we really don't know. Obviously, we'll... Team provides you with the information, which is reevaluated in 1 week. And Shams has his, Shams says 2 weeks, which John Krasinski confirmed with the organization is a likely timeline. So it's nothing major, but ultimately, it's the most amount of time he is going to miss. So I guess before we jump into the meat of the show, Leo, did you have any thoughts about just Anthony Edwards missing likely about 8 games, 9 if you include the 3 minutes he played in the Indiana game, which will end up being the longest consecutive games he's missed in his career.
Yeah, Ryan, I do believe that we need to treat this, I would say, seriously. Let's not treat it like it's just a minor injury that he'll bounce right back. Again, you know, if all goes well, he will. But if anything, the playoffs from last year has taught us is that you cannot rush players back from injury. Obviously, it's not necessarily a sore calf, which, again, that's a whole other note. Jalen Clark missed the last game against the Denver Nuggets with a sore calf. And this is a guy who already recovered from one torn Achilles before. So was it torn Achilles or torn ACL that Jalen Clark had?
Achilles.
Achilles, exactly. So it's a little scary that he's already sitting out with a sore calf right now. So my point being is that I don't want to treat this as like, okay, well, let's get Ant back as soon as possible. Yes, it is important to try and get some games. We'll talk about the schedule later while the schedule's soft. We don't want to push him back to where, again, it's a soft tissue injury. We saw even the Warriors, obviously, Steph Curry is quite a bit older and longer in his career than Anthony Edwards, but they didn't want to rush him back, and that was the playoffs. And Steph ended up missing the rest of the playoffs, but at the earliest, the prognosis was that he would come back game 6. And if he came back in game 6 from game 1, that would have been about 12 days. So we're looking at that 1 to 2 week mark as well, too. So, yeah, I agree with you. Definitely probably sit him through until at least they return back home from their West Coast road trip, where they do have Sacramento and then Denver. You know, it's tough, but that's what happens. I'd rather get rid of these nagging, you know, random injuries early than later on in the season.
Yep, I agree. And I think it's important, like you said, not to just brush it off as a nothing injury, but I also think it's important not to doom and gloom about this.
Sure.
He's probably going to miss about 8 games, and it's not a great, I mean, it's not a good thing for the rest of his season, but I think there's every expectation that he'll come back and have the season that we expect him to have, but it'll just have this 8-game absence early in the season. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm just interesting to see it. Really interesting to see it, one, how they play with him off the court. We've already saw about 2 games. I'm going to call it a game and a half, because I just think the first half of the Indiana game, in terms of just when you lose someone mid game, it throws off everything. And it's not to give them an excuse, because Indiana lost 2 players during that game,
right,
on top of half their roster. So I'm going to call it 1.5, because that's when in the second half they reset the rotation. They brought in Mike as the starter.
Was something that in the LA game, I was sitting, you know, on media row live in person at crypto.com, and Ant was kind of, I don't know if the TV picked it up, but during a couple timeouts where he was walking to the bench, he was kind of grabbing at his hamstring a little bit in that leg area as well too. And I think Dane and John Krasinski and myself, we all kind of know, like, hey, like, Ant's kind of pulling at something right there. And so the fact that, you know, he was able to play through that game, and he had a pretty good game against the Lakers, and he tried to play through it obviously 2 days later in Indiana, I think is proof to show that, like, rose colored, you know, glasses, hopefully everything is fine. They're just being cautious with it, that they want to make sure, hey, let's not make sure you're tugging at that, and let's just give you maybe a week or two off. So.
Yep. I'll be interested to see how they play with him gone, and I'm very interested to see how he'll play coming back from the first, call it medium to major injury and sadness career. I'm interested. But let's jump into our howl or fouls. Basically, if we agree or disagree with the topic. First one, Minnesota's defensive rating is 119.8, which is 27th in the league. And I'll say, with Rudy Gobert off the court, they are dead last by a mile. It's the defense has been pure, just awful, like beyond your wildest negative expectations. This defense through 4 games has just been abysmal. And we'll talk about the expectations or like the causes of that. But howl or foul that the Wolves defense is just cooked.
I'm going to say howl for this one. And I promise you, I am not saying howl because of Ryan and my longstanding wager about if the Wolves are going to finish with a better offensive rating, which is my bet, or Ryan's thought that bet, which is the defensive rating, will finish higher. So currently right now, Wolves' defensive rating is 27th, like Ryan said. The offensive rating is 19th, so it's not great either. But I do think that the Wolves have faced so far through 4 games, I would say 1.5 good teams. It's really just Denver, and then you had that one Luka explosion game. So that's what I'm calling the half good team that they're playing. aside from that, they play some pretty bad teams as far as offensive rating goes. You're talking about the Blazers, the Pacers. I think Pacers are the second worst in the league in the offensive rating. And so you think about that. They're playing not great offensive teams, yet the defense is still getting cooked by them. And with Ant's injury, now Ant isn't, you know, the number one primary defender on all the best players, but, you know, he is a better offensive defensive player than, say, someone like, Terrence Shannon or Mike Conley, who's going to get more minutes instead. The thing that really concerns me, Ryan, about the defensive rating is the fouling. They're currently bottom seven in both total fouls and the opponent's free throw rate. It's something that Finch has talked about in a couple of post-game press conferences, that they need to stop fouling and start playing defense before it's too late and they have to resort to fouling. You mentioned already the non-Rudy numbers look, you know, absolutely terrible. And so it's something that I am concerned about, because it seems like it's a bit of a effort/technique thing. And again, I don't want to say that it's impossible for the Wolves to, you know, get better. They clearly will probably get better, especially given the continued bad teams they'll be playing coming up. But I'm concerned right now. I do think they are cooked right now. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go foul that they're cooked. The defense has been super concerning. I don't think there's any other way to do that, to look at it. Finch has said after the game, like, they're super concerned with it. How can you not be? Like, this was 2 years ago. They were the best defense in the NBA. And then even last season when they swapped out Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle, a defensive downgrade, at least with Rudy Gobert on the court. And then Kyle Anderson left, which I think was a gigantic reason why they were so good defensively in the non-Rudy minutes, was Kyle Anderson. And they still were, I believe, sixth last year. And so I think it's fair to, and I think myself and others underestimated, just like they lost a defender in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and they replaced him with Jalen Clark, but I don't think that's a one-for-one thing. Obviously, the big difference between those two players is offensively, obviously, but, and then just that you're still not, like, it's weird to say that, like, Cat was such a big part of that number one defense a couple seasons ago. And now, I mean, now that you don't have Ant in the Denver game specifically, I thought a big reason they lost that game is because they didn't have Ant on the defensive end of the court. Jamal Murray, that's been Ant's assignment in these Denver games, and Ant has always just absolutely won that matchup on both ends of the court. And the game changed in the third quarter when Jamal Murray just started going off. And maybe he hit a bunch of tough shots at the beginning of the quarter and then got some open shots later in the quarter. But maybe the whole game goes differently if Ant is out there defensively, and obviously offensively. It would be too. So I think it's fair to say, like, when I said preseason that they should be top five, maybe I probably should come off that at this point. But I still just think that they do have the personnel to have a top 10 offense. And if they don't, that's probably going to be pretty worrying for this season. With Gobert on the court, I think those minutes are going to be that top five defensive quality. But the minutes defensively with Gobert off the court just continue to be horrendous. And it's not that you need them to be up there top five anymore, but, like, they got to be top 20, top 15. And, I mean, they're just not anywhere close. And so it is super worrying. I do think a lot of it is, I mean, again, just four games. We can say that. We're going to be saying that for a few weeks, just five games, just six games. But I do think that there's some progression to the mean that can happen, and not in terms of, like, luck, but just in terms of playing better. I think they just gotta do it. It's such lame analysis, but, like, you gotta commit to it. It's gotta be something that is important to you as a team, and I think that can help overall. But I do just think that the non-Rudy minutes are gonna continue to be an issue. And as much as people want to trade Rudy or whatever, it's just hard to imagine what the team would look like with zero Rudy minutes on it at all, and what the offense would do as a whole. So
yeah, I
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I agree that's probably not good to overreact and say that, you know, doom and gloom, the defense is never going to get better. It is small sample size. You are facing, as I mentioned, you know, I say 1.5 good teams, but you're also talking about two of the best offensive hubs at picking apart defenses between Jokic and Luka, you know, in these four games. And they're not going to play these, you know, top three or four MVP caliber players all the time. So, you know, yes, Jeremy Grant looks great, but I mean, you know, they did hold the Blazers down in the fourth quarter. Where I think I do disagree with you, Ryan, is that I'm not, I guess just not as optimistic as you, is in the makeup of the roster. I don't feel that based on, again, all this based on four games, like you said, we'll be saying this all episode, is that I don't believe in the personnel that they have. Obviously, we talked about who they lost. If you think about who they're picking up and playing those minutes, I did not estimate Mike and Naz Reid to be this bad early in the season. Now, Naz has been playing better. I will say Naz played some pretty inspired defense in the Nuggets game. I was very pleasantly surprised, and hopefully he's turning it around. But I didn't think that Mike was going to be this cooked, especially on the defensive end. I thought I was a little bit more hopeful that TJ Shannon would be a little bit better defensively. He's kind of let me down, I think, based on my own expectations of what I thought he could do. There was one play, I don't know if you remember, in that Nuggets game, Jamal Murray, I kind of had him trapped, like was coming off a pick, and TJ got picked off, and TJ kind of looked like he was doing like a revert, like a backdoor, rear view, like contest. I say he just like jumped right into Jamal Murray and mowed him over, and it was two free throws. And again, I'm not using one play to say that TJ is a bad defender, but it was just one of those, like, that's not a mistake that you would see like Nikhil do, right? Or Kyle Anderson would do. Or and so again, I think because of that personnel, let's not even talk about Rob or Bones Highland. Like, these are all guys that are playing real rotation minutes for the Wolves. And I worry that with that fall off in the personnel that they have, that the defense just gonna have a hard time staying even, say, a top 10. Again, I would be pleased if the offense, you know, picks it back up and the defense is stay respectable. But yeah, 27th is just not good enough at all right now.
Yeah, I think with Mike, I think it, looking at his defensive, and he's not going to be, that's a big part of why they're not as good defensively as two seasons ago, is Mike Conley is not the same player, and that's probably just as much going from 36 to 38 years old. But I do think, and he talked about this after the game yesterday, I think there's just going to be an adjustment for him from starting to going on the bench. The last time he was like a consistent bench player, he was 21 years old. And now, and so I just think there's going to be a transition just mentally for him coming off the bench versus starting. And I'm not saying that he's going to go back to being like an awesome defender like he was two seasons ago, but I do think that Mike's game will recover to closer to what like our pregame assumptions or preseason assumptions were for him. So that part of it, I think, will come back, but it's incredibly worrying. And I'm just kind of at the point with it where I'm just interested to see how much of it is, like you mentioned, schematic and talent on the court and like the things you can't fix, and how much of it is like the soft factors of like give a shit, of game plan discipline, of like that type of stuff, where it's just like, you guys aren't even like people want to blame Finch. It's like, Finch didn't tell you to miss a rotation or whatever. I'm more interested in that, and that I think we will get to figure out in the next few games. If they get torched by Austin Reeves against the Lakers, I think that's like a big warning flag, big red flag. That's like, you guys got chewed out in the media by Finch about the defense not being good. You face a not good offense. The Lakers without Luka and LeBron are not a good offense, and you still got torched by basically the one guy that they have. If that happens, I think that's a big warning flag. And then your next two games are Charlotte and Brooklyn, two teams that are not very good, although they probably lean closer to the defensive end being the poor end of the court for those teams. But still, like, it's one game here and there, you have a bad defensive night, that's going to happen. Specifically against Denver, when you don't have Ant and Jalen Clark, probably should be a surprise that you get cooked by Jamal Murray, who's having a great start to the season. Like, that aspect of it makes sense. But like, the two losses they had against the two good offensive teams that they faced, I think those are about two of the worst defensive performances that the Wolves have had since trading for Rudy Gobert. They're just like, there's just a no shot. Even when they were winning against Denver, it just kind of felt like, well, they're just not going to get enough stops to win this game, and they didn't. And some of that was Ant being out, like I said, but other times it was just like, it was a lot. So I'm interested am interested to see them play some lesser teams to see if that can get them back on track. But it's one of my two biggest worries with this team right now is they're just not going to be good enough defensively. And I don't know if they're going to try to win the title this year, if that, like, what level the defense needs to get to, but bare minimum, it needs to be top 10. And they're just like worlds apart from that right now.
When you talk about the defense saying that they played kind of, you know, had two really bad performances defensively, if you think about when it happens once, you could say it as, oh, it's just like a one-off. It's not like a, you know, trend. But if it happens twice, you can kind of write it off maybe as, okay, well, that's just kind of a coincidence, right? They had two bad performances in the first couple of games, in like, you know, three games. Now, if it happens a third time in the next game or two, now we're talking about maybe a trend. And that's where I'm starting to get a little worried, is that's kind of going in that. And I understand that they are missing personnel. Every team is missing personnel. Defense, though, is a team-oriented thing. Dante talked about it, and Rudy talked about it after the Laker game when they got roasted by Luka Doncic, that he said that they felt like the offense was affecting the defense too much. It was an effort thing. They, you know, once their shots stopped falling, they weren't playing as hard. So like you said, yes, they do just have to do it. That is a part of it. But they have to really kind of get back into a foundation and a standard of playing defense at a higher level, instead of just, we only play hard when we really need to.
Yeah, and if you're going to have one-off bad defensive games, which, like you said, happen, we need to have, at the very least, see one-off, two-off, really good defensive games. And they've had basically, I mean, the Portland, the first three quarters in Portland defensively weren't great. And the fourth quarter was great defensively. Indiana defensively probably wasn't that great, but ultimately was good enough to win. But yeah, they just need to pick it up on that end. And I'm very curious to see how they do it. A lot of times you can blame Ant for kind of not being locked in on that court, that side of the court. Well, obviously it wasn't his fault against Denver. He's out. So I'm interested to see how they turn that around. But my other main worry, just watching the first four games of the season, is the point guard situation. Like we've already mentioned, Mike has not played as well as people would have hoped. Dante, in that when he's been playing more of that point guard role, has struggled as well. Rob Dillingham, aside from the Denver game, was not a factor. Obviously broke his nose and wasn't able to play against Indiana, which is unfortunate. And then you're playing Bones Highland, which I think he's played well enough, but ultimately I think if you're relying heavy minutes on Bones Highland, something else has gone wrong, in my opinion. But yeah, the Howler foul, just based on the point guard minutes, is Finch needs to firm up the point guard rotation. Howler foul, Leo.
I'm going foul on this in terms of in the immediate. I think the Ant injury really threw things into flux. Seems like Finch is really just trying to patch up holes on a ship that just keeps getting new holes, right? So you start with the whole Dante thing, and with him, it's, you know, the worry with Dante, the concern is his playmaking. And then Finch is worrying, like, okay, well, do I plug this hole? Now I have a new hole, which is like trusting him to be consistent, not get into foul trouble, not go ice cold. Dante's had a ton of quarters so far in these different games where he's gotten like red hot, and then he just goes like extremely cold. And it's like he's out there to have to make shots. I think in the Lakers game, he made his first four shots, and then he completely disappeared after that. Against the Pacers, in the second quarter, he went 3 for 3, and then he went like ice cold in the second half. He went 2 for 9. And then the Denver game, same thing. He started, he had 3 of 4 threes in the second quarter, and then he went 0 of 3 in the second half, including a ton of wide open threes in the fourth. That really, really would have swung the momentum back. And so, you know, it's kind of that with Dante, with Mike. We talked about him enough, about his age, and just trying to, you know, it's Finch trying to get Mike back into it. Now, I think you and I can agree, Mike looked the best he's looked against any team in the Denver series. He was in there again, I think maybe starting, like you mentioned, is helping his momentum and getting him into rhythm. He was attacking, he was rebounding, he was doing everything. He had a great first half. And then with Rob, yeah, it's the inexperience, the lack of trust, and the lack of size. It's like, do you want to play him at risk of just like leaning into development and then losing games? And so I think right now it doesn't look great, the whole point guard rotation. But I do trust Finch to kind of mad scientist his way into figuring it out. I think he does have to try different things right now, where it's like, okay, well, I tried Bones for a couple games, and now I'm going to lean into Rob a little bit more. I have to play Mike right now. He's going to have to tinker with it a bit, but I do believe that it will get figured out. I don't know if that's something he needs to firm up now. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I do. I do think what's become clear is that at least like the turnover issue, like the backcourt turnovers, like that issue has a lot more to do with the team they're playing than it does what they're doing. Because it wasn't teams that don't pressure you, like Denver and LA. Denver, yeah. We didn't see those backcourt turnovers, and teams that do, like Portland and Indiana, we did. Like, now will other teams start to change their strategy and start to pressure the Wolves when their non-true point guards have the ball? Maybe, but I do, that is not as big of a concern for me, like in a long-term sense. Although if you're going to try to win in the playoffs, OKC is the ultimate bad guy, and they're a team that obviously does that really well. So that's a worry there. I'm going to go howl that they do need to firm up the point guard situation. I agree in the short term, they can make it through, especially once Ant comes back and they start giving him the ball more. I do kind of think that is like just turning Ant into the point guard is probably the easiest situation, at least in the starting group. And then you can, when Ant's off the court, you can make sure to have Mike or Bones or Rob on the court. I just think long term being the second half of this season, the playoffs, I just think they likely need to add someone in that group. And I guess I've kind of felt like that the past 2 years, and they didn't do it last year. And 2 years ago, it was Monte Morris who played a limited amount, especially in the playoffs. So maybe there's just like the front office sees it differently than I do, and seemingly like the fan base does. But it seems like a big enough issue where, unless they just promote Ant full time into that position, it's going to start creating other problems. Like, I just don't think Dante is suited for that role. I think you want him running around screens, playing that way. Him with the ball in his hands as like that type of creator, I don't think is where he's best suited. Even if it's what the team might need from him, I think they need to find a way to get him more in that shooting guard type role. You mentioned Rob. I thought he played pretty well against Denver. Defense is obviously always going to be the issue with Rob, and when no one is getting a stop, you might as well throw Rob in there. And I thought he played well. Like you mentioned, the size is just really tough. And a feeling I've kind of been having about the whole Rob situation, and you see fans clamoring for him to play more, and I totally get it. And I probably agree to a large extent. But like one thing I've seen is like, well, Finch just totally ruined his confidence by pulling him last year or by not giving him minutes this year. And I'm at the point where I kind of feel like if the way Finch has managed the rotation with Rob is the reason why he's not playing well, then he was never going to work out. Like, you need to be able to have more mental strength than that, even at 20, 21 years old, to be able to work with the flow and succeed in the minutes that's giving you, and not let one missed shot, one bad play throw you off. It's not to say he can't grow, and I'm more arguing that I don't think that that's what's going on there. I think Rob has more mental strength than that. I mean, he's allowed to be frustrated with lack of playing time, but I think you're not giving enough credit to these players to think that that they're just on a whim being letting their whole game be downtrodden by rotation minutes. But ultimately, we haven't seen enough for him. I don't think this year is going to be the season that we get a Rob Dillingham peak year or a spike year, an improvement year. I think that'll party. Make.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's coming, unfortunately. So Ant is out, I'm not sure. I think you just, like you said, you paper over it as best as you can. When Ant comes back, I think it's time to just make him be the point guard that Shea. I mean, why can't? I'm not saying he has to be as good as Shea, but like that's the type of role I think Ant can take over. They don't do the Thunder play a pure point guard aside from Shea. No, he's their point guard. Go look at, like we mentioned, fantasy basketball. What's the position listed under Shea? It's PG. He's a point guard. I think Ant can play that role, and I think he can play it well enough where it's not just him turning, like, just his usage skyrocketing. I think you can still play within the flow of the offense while Ant is the primary ball handler with the starting group bringing the ball up the court.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a sliding scale of how much do you put Rob in, say, throwing him in as a starting point guard or just, you know, starting backcourt spot next to Ant, and then worrying about, you know, we talked for, what, like 15 minutes about the defense earlier, and it's like if you're taking Dante out and putting Rob in, like, what does that do? right? And so, again, there's no perfect answer. That's why I believe in Fish to figure it out. I'm in a Wolves, Timberwolves group chat or group DM on Twitter, and we were trying to solve this whole Rob conundrum. Like, what's going on there? Why isn't he getting minutes? Why isn't he developing? Like, what's going on? And, you know, I posted a message that got kind of a universal thumbs up from everyone that I said, you know, it feels like he's not seeing eye to eye with Finch, but it does boil down to, I think, three things. And of those three things, I think one is that, you know, perhaps there's a little bit of ego coming in, kind of as hot shit. Like, you're a lottery, you're top 10 pick. You won sixth man of the year. You know, you had a very highlight worthy game. You had a ton of followers. You played for, you know, Kanye West Donda Academy. Like, people loved your game. Kind of hot shit ego. But you're getting kind of a nothing given coach. Like, Chris Finch isn't a dude that's just going to, like, you know, roll over and be like, all right, you know what? Go ahead. You didn't earn it, but I'm going to give it to you. That's one. Two, I think, is that we talked about the size is going to be a problem, and it's always going to be adjustment period for him. So no matter what, no matter if he had a good attitude or good ego or he's doing great practice, size is always going to be a problem for him. And I think third and lastly is that he did have some injuries during his rookie year. He had some ankle injuries that kept kind of nagging him, and I feel like that kind of threw off his rhythm, his development. Because it threw off his rhythm, he didn't get enough playing time, and it's kind of bled over to here. So I think all three of those things have kind of zapped his confidence, at least it feels like. And I think thus it's making him maybe not as effective in practice where he's not getting minutes because of it, or just even in the games where he's kind of like dwindling, like you saw in the first quarter when he got the call over Bones Highland to come in the game. He had a couple really good passes. He even had a deflection early in the second quarter with active hands, I think getting a steal off Jamal Murray. But then, you know, you kind of saw him, you know, a couple bad turnovers. He had two really bad turnovers that really stemmed the tide when the Wolves were, you know, getting close to getting ahead or cutting that lead all the way back down to zero. And so you kind of see him kind of weighing here and there with his confidence. So, yeah, you know, that's kind of my worry with it. But I do agree with you. I think Ant can definitely shoulder more of the load. It's just who are we putting next to him?
Yeah, and I do think Rob – did you think Rob played fairly well in that Denver game? I thought he had some moments.
I've seen a lot of people talk about that he had a good game. My summation of his performance against Denver was that I think it was just a net negative by a little bit. I think he did some things good. But then I think once he started to make some mistakes, it just kind of like – it kind of balanced out, and as a result, I mean, look, Bones Highland ended up playing more minutes than Rob at the end of the game, and yes, there was a bunch of garbage time minutes, you know, in the final 4 minutes of the game or whatnot, but, you know, I don't think it was a great game. I do think that maybe it's just because my expectations were, you know, a little bit higher for him coming in, but yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Some of the turnovers were just, like, the jump pass stuff is really bad, like, just... It seems like everything in the lane is a jump pass and he gets caught in the air and it's a turnover. I know people want him to play, and I mostly agree that he should play, but when I watch him, he's not a positive on the end of the court on that. And so it's like, how much do you want to sacrifice winning now versus putting him in there? And for me personally, I'm kind of more err on the side of, one, I always want to assume that everyone, like, I think a lot of online fans specifically go immediately assume people are an idiot. Rob's an idiot because he's not taken to his role, and Finch is an idiot for not playing him. And I'm always going to go the exact opposite way and assume competence, because these people get paid a lot of money to do their jobs and they've done them well. And so I'm going to assume it's competence, and Rob is trying his best. And like you mentioned, the size stuff is limiting him there. And Finch has more information than all of us, and he's deciding this is the amount of minutes Rob is playing. And so I just think that we need to like just assume that people aren't nefarious. Like, they're making the best decision they have with the information they have. And so I'm hoping that they can get him more minutes so they can see an uptick in play from Rob, because they spent a lot of draft value on him, a pick and a swap. So, hopefully it can turn around. But we'll move on to our third howl or foul. Ant will be missing at least the next 7 games, a total of 8 and really 9, because he only played 3 minutes in that Indiana game. We'll do a little bit of a schedule talk. This is kind of more fun with football, where like 7 games is almost half the schedule in an NFL season. But we'll go with the assumption that he's going to miss the next seven games. That lines up again with what with Shams is reporting and what the Wolves will put out. Mix seven games. Howl or foul that the Wolves can go 5-2 in the next seven games. And before you answer, I just want to give those seven games. So they play at home versus the Lakers. They go on the road for three, at Charlotte, at Brooklyn, and then at Knicks. So that's with no Luka LeBron. That's three teams that are just playing not very good. And then the Knicks, who are obviously the opposite of that, they're either co-favorites with the Cavs to go to the finals, and then three more games versus Utah, at Sacramento, at Utah. So that's six games against not very good teams, or five against tanking teams, and then I guess I should ask you, Leo, are the Kings tanking? Unintentional tank. So I guess I'll answer first. I'll say how I think 5-2 is realistic. To be honest, I think they'll be favored in six of the seven games. And so if Ant were healthy, I would say 6-1 should be the goal. And so Ant's out, I'll knock that down to 5-2. Maybe that's always realistic. Like, basically you're not going to win six straight winnable games, but I think 5-2 should be the goal. And at the very least 4-3 through this stretch. If you can get to 4-3 and you're sitting above 500 with Ant comes back, I think you're in a fine enough spot to continue to approach the preseason win number you wanted. But if they're below 500 with Ant comes back, with the schedule that's there, I think that's a pretty big disappointment. And at that point, maybe there'd be some, obviously you're missing your best player, some losses are expected, but I think if they go 3-4 over the next seven, I think there'd be some worrying that starts at that point, because at that point you'd be, 12 games into the season.
I agree with you. I'm going Hal for this one. I also think that they should go 5-2, and to me, 5-2 is like the bar for me. I feel like they should not. If they go below that, I'll be a little bit annoyed and frustrated about it. You outlined the games we talked. At New York is obviously going to be the toughest test. New York lost to the Milwaukee Bucks today on the road. They're kind of figuring some stuff out. Jalen Brunson looked like he really pulled a groin or like a knee or something late in that game, and they had to call a timeout. It looked like he was going to help to the locker room, but he came right back. He played through it for better or worse, and no, Tom Thibodeau is not the coach over there. Mike Brown trotted him back out in a losing effort against the Bucks, and so he'll be healthy, and Cat's always, down for a good revenge game. I do think it's fair to account for at least one flub game against one of these like playing hopeful teams. It could be anyone, but if I had to really target one, I'd say it's probably playing at Utah. It's at the end of the road back to back coming back from SAC. So that's on November 10th, which is my birthday, and it's very fitting that they would lose on my birthday. They lost on my birthday against Miami. That was a Nikola Jovic game winning kind of shot that they had. I'll never forget that one. And so yeah, Utah is also a team. They've been playing really tough. They've been playing really hard. Markkanen just dropped 50-something points to overtime win. Utah, again, they don't have the most talent per se right now in terms of like win now players, but they are playing hard. I'm always a big believer in Will Hardy. I think he is a good coach who's just been kind of handcuffed by management. So yeah, I think that would be potentially one of the games they could drop, is that end of a road to road back to back after Sacramento. So yeah, 5-2 to me, I think, is a realistic expectation. I would hope that they go no worse than that.
Yeah. And if that'd put their record at, if I can do some simple math here, they'd be 7-4. That's a 52 win pace. So obviously the schedule is super light, especially considering the injuries to Indiana and the Lakers. But if you're at a 52 win pace with your best player missing most of the games, I think you'd be in a good spot. Maybe we're underestimating. I mean, if they play defensively like they have, they got no shot of going 5-2 even against a soft schedule. But I think that's my mental target. It's probably not always great to go game by game and assume a win, because
things happen.
I mean, they could go 4-3, beat the Knicks, and then lose 2-2 to the Jazz. Who knows? But I think if they can go 5-2, that would be a good bar. 4-3 you can probably live with at that point. And you just hope that Ant comes back and you gear up for the December schedule and the January schedule, and when it really gets tough and you're going to need your guys. Cause I think like last year when they were missing all their guys, like the schedule was really tough at that point in the season.
Right.
And it's these schedule always plays a much bigger portion of wins and losses than people like to assume. You mentioned at Utah on a second night of a back-to-back. Basically, the two mountain cities of Salt Lake and Denver are always tough on the second night of a back-to-back. Salt Lake less so than Denver, but there's still a little bit of that. Those are always tough, and the Jazz have looked not awful so far. I'm sure it's – honestly, you probably don't want to be playing the Jazz in November. You'd much rather have them down near the bottom of the schedule. You kind of saw that with the Wolves last year. They played them. So the fact that the Wolves played the Jazz, I think, all four times before, like, January or before February is probably not ideal, and that's whatever. You can talk about what the ideal aspects of the schedule. The Wolves don't have a ton of travel in general this year, which is unusual. But the schedule plays a lot bigger part. And last year was a perfect example of this, where I remember sitting with Jace on Media Row, Jace Frederick, and just going, the Wolves are gonna win a bunch of games here. And it was like, it's not because I have some giant optimism about their on-court play. I'm just like, their schedule lightens up. They're healthy, yeah, and their schedule lightens up. They're going to start winning games. And I think, like, it's fair to kind of discount what they were doing at the end of last season because the schedule was so light. But if you're going to do that, I think it's also fair to go, well, maybe they weren't struggling as much as it looked like in the beginning of the season because their schedule was so tough. So I think it's all just, and it's my favorite thing about basketball, and I enjoy baseball too in the same way. It's all sample size. It's lame. It's boring. I know the football fans want to come in here and after four games be calling people terrible. And I know for Vikings fans, the J.J. McCarthy, Rob Dillingham comparisons in my head are very, they're very similar kind of what's going on with them. But like, it matters. Like, you just need sample size. I know we talk about the net ratings and the defensive ratings, but like, until 20 games, like, I don't think you can take much away from that stuff. And even then, it's probably more like 40 games until you're really knowing what a team is. So I guess that brings us right into our next discussion. After the 2-2 start, howl or foul on your views about the Wolves have greatly changed? I'm going to go foul. It would take a lot more for me to really, like, greatly shift my view of the team four games in. And it's not to say the point guard situation is worrying. The defense is super worrying. Ant's injury, we're hoping for a 5-2 stretch here. But ultimately, like, it could affect them a lot. Like, those are potential worries that seem to be fixable. But I just keep going back to how Ant played in Portland. And even offensively in LA to a certain extent, the guy just looks ready to take over this team, this league. And there's a bunch of guys, there's like five other guys that probably fit that category. Certainly the monster in San Antonio, you watch that and it's just like, how would you ever beat them with him? But I just think if they can get Ant back healthy from this injury, they're going to start winning games again because he's good enough to carry, let's call this team mediocre without him. He's good enough to carry that type of team. And I don't think they're mediocre without him, but I'm just saying, for example, I think he's good enough. So there's things to worry about and there's things to be optimistic about. And I don't think they've started 2-2 each of the last, like, every team starts 2-2. Go look at the standings. There's very few teams that aren't 2-2. And honestly, the teams that aren't 2-2, you click on their schedule and you can see why they're 3-0. Cause they've played a bunch of easier teams. And obviously the Wolves haven't played a monster schedule yet and won't until later, but I think it's too early to really start vastly. If you thought the team was going to stink coming into the season, I wouldn't say there's anything to change that opinion, but it's like whatever opinion you had before, I'm not sure there's been enough on the court to really sway people one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ryan. I say foul that I don't think my views have changed greatly. And emphasis on the greatly. I really didn't think that the point guard issue was going to be as glaring as, you know, it's kind of turned out to be so far, four games in. I didn't think that Mike and Nas both being this shaky is kind of, you could say, more of the more veteran guys on the team. Didn't expect that either. But there's always weird things that happen at the start of the season. You know, you talk about the teams that, you know, have gone undefeated. They played a pretty cake schedule. Then you have weird things like Utah blowing out the Clippers at the beginning of the season, or Dallas to Houston really, really struggling out the gates as well, too. Again, they weren't, you know, poised to be championship teams per se, maybe Houston, but, you know, they've struggled out the gates. You know, some of it has been matchups. You know, they played the Thunder and whatnot, and the Spurs are playing well. But, yeah, all that to say is I do think that this, the foundation of a solid team is still there. Julius has proven that, you know, straight edge Julius has proven that he's willing to play at that pace he was playing during the postseason. You know, there's been some other good parts to the team as well, too. Dante's had some, you know, good shooting night so far, and Jaden's really developed better than I thought he would, you know, especially in the last couple games. I know he did have a great shooting night against the Pacers, but he hit that really, really clutch last kind of dinker and dumper to finish off the put that final dagger in. And so I really loved, you know, Jaden for that. So yeah, again, hasn't greatly changed. I think it's going to be okay. We'll see how it looks like in a week or two after they've had a easier schedule here.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's move into our. Into the Apex Alphas for the week. Who is, Leo, who is your leader of the pack?
My leader of the pack is straight edge Julius Randle. Great segue. I think he is probably, as of right now, you would say the best player on the Wolves given through four games of the season. Obviously, Ant is hurt, so he didn't really get to play the last two games. But Julius, if you take a look at his stats, he's basically averaging 25 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, less than 2 turnovers a game. He has nearly 2 stocks a game, and he's averaging this all in splits of 57% from the field, 43% from 3, and 78% from the free throw line while drawing, I think, close to around like 7 to 8 free throws a game. His defensive effort may wane from time to time, as we know with Julius, but he's really shouldering that offensive load. He really dragged Minnesota to a win against the Indiana Pacers. He slowed down a little bit towards the end, but he was just kind of big bullying them all the way through, just tough, playing team basketball. He's had less turnovers, like I mentioned, in terms of that old, you know, back them down and not look around and get stripped. Part of that might be the type of teams that they've been playing so far, but you have to give it to Julius. He's been really awesome. Yeah, he's straight edge Julius Randle, my Apex Alpha.
Yeah, Julius has been great, and they're going to need him to continue to do most of that here with Ant out. I think especially offensively, he's just been exactly what you'd want, what they saw down the stretch of last season, where obviously in the beginning of last season, the ball was pretty sticky and they were still working him in offensively. And really, I just think about the offense in general with this team. You have to feel really good about it. I was kind of surprised looking it up that they were 19th in offense. To me, it's felt a lot better than that. We could probably just chalk it up to 4 games or whatever. I feel really, really good about this offense just in general. If they can stop turning the ball over, I think that's always going to be the key with like a motion type offense. But yeah, Randle has been exactly what they need from him. And just like from a big picture sense, like, they need like a second all-star caliber player on this roster. On any championship roster, you need at least, if you only got one guy that can possibly make the all-star team and it's not like Jokic level type of player, which I even in whatever peak I think Ant has for this year, I don't think like that's in the cards for at least this year. Like you're going to need a second level all-star caliber player. And Julius has been that. And
yeah, hey. Yep. Sorry, Ryan. I do want to say this. I had Julius Randle's basketball reference page up. Have you ever looked at some of his nicknames on there?
Yeah, like Orange Julius, that type of stuff.
So that's one. But then he has one that's called Don Julio, which is kind of cool. You have Big Jew, we know, King Julius. We have Black Panther, the Sergeant. And get this. This is on his basketball reference page. Beyblade is one of Julius Randle's official nicknames on Basketball Reference, which is kind of funny. I'm assuming it's the way that he plays, just kind of, you know, spins and, you know, just rams into people in the paint. Anyway, so I just saw that and I had to throw that in there.
Huh. Maybe when things are going well in a pregame locker room, I'll have to like find some of these like nicknames for players and see if they just even know where, like, I don't even know where that's like coming from. But yeah, that's interesting. my Apex Alpha is Jaden McDaniels, but with an asterisk on offense, which I it probably applies to your pick of Julius Randle too, where the offense from Jaden has been outstanding. He's gotten increased even when Ant was on the floor. He was increasing his offensive load there, and he was doing it not just in the flow of the offense, but like in transition. He didn't need the ball more. Just taking what the defense gave him, like that type of that type of offensive stuff. And in the Denver game, you saw him even take on more responsibility, and it was just offensively, he's been great. Now, the flip side is the defense has been so bad that Fitch just basically called him out in the post game. So while I praised Jaden for his outstanding play, I do think that it's been on one end of the court, and him and Rudy, at least from what Finch is saying, are the two biggest reasons that they need to get back to the defensive level that they projected. So first time in Apex Alpha on our pod has been with an asterisk. It's Jaden McDaniels on offense.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about his usage percentage. Obviously, he's had the last basically two games for it to go up, but his usage percentage is at 21.5% this season. That's a 33% jump from where his career level is at 15%. So again, it's kind of great to see. I will say this. I mean, yes, the overall team defense has not been great, especially his fouling has, you know, continued. It's been an issue in his career the whole way, but we've really seen it recently. But he is averaging 2.5 blocks per game right now, which is kind of wild because he's kind of shifted his role as kind of being that. I mean, he doesn't have a choice right now, but when Ant was still available, he was playing kind of a little bit more off ball, kind of that backline defense. And I think that's really fruitful. So I think that's great. But yeah, I agree. He does have to fix his defense. Jaden McDaniels, Basketball Reference, has a seatbelt. Big Mac, shout out to Lil Mac on Jordan McLaughlin on the San Antonio Spurs, and Slim. Those are his three nicknames right now. But the notes that I have on Jaden is funny. So I attended the Lakers Timberwolves game in person, and in the locker room, while waiting for media to, or waiting for the players to be ready for media in the locker room, Jaden is just on the side. He's like kind of mumbling to himself in the way that Jaden does. And you just hear him. He looks over at, I think it was either John Krasinski or Chris Hine. He goes like, "You guys don't want to talk to me. I'm going to say some crazy shit." Because he was just so frustrated with how that game went against Luka. Luka was really, really just kind of getting to him. Luka was doing a lot of talking towards him. So, yeah, understandable. He was quite frustrated with that. But, yeah, you know, Jaden McDaniels, I love that pick.
Awesome. Yeah, let's move on to Prey of the Week, where I think you have a Jaden McDaniels Prey this week.
I do. We are throwing it back to opening day, which was a week ago, last Tuesday. My man, Chinese Jokic, Yang Hansen, was dunked on, posterized by Jaden McDaniels. And, you know, I hate to do it to him, you know, but it is something Jaden baptized him with a welcome to the league moment. And somehow it didn't make the NBA top 10 plays of the night, which is kind of crazy to me. I'm thinking that the NBA is playing it smart. The PR people know they don't want to upset the billions of Asian fans out there. I'm just going to dunk in on Yang Hansen during that. But what's funny about all that is that Jaden also had a big dunk. I think it was kind of on Aaron Gordon yesterday as well, too, or against the Nuggets recently, where he kind of threw it up. But I was at the Clippers-Blazers game on Sunday. Don't ask me why. It was a gift that I was giving someone. It was Clipper-Blazers tickets. And it felt like it was a Blazers home game there. You will not believe the amount of Yang Hansen jerseys that were in the crowd. And of course, LA is notoriously known for having a large Asian population, and you know, his fans were there. The biggest, I shit you not, the biggest ooze of the night was when he got an offensive rebound in the first quarter and the crowd went like, ooh. And then I think he got like fouled right after. That was it. He never played past the first couple minutes of the game. I think he got in because of some foul trouble to cling in. But yeah, shout out to Yang Hansen. Sorry about that, brother, but you're the prey of the week.
Yeah, fun welcome to the NBA moment. And it was kind of funny. He only played like the next 13 seconds in that after getting dunked on by Jaden and was taken out for the rest of the game. So, he was awesome in summer league, but I think it's always just with any rookie, like the expectations always kind of balloon past what is probably reasonable, but he would might as well. It seems like a fun player. But my prayer of the week was the Obi Toppin narrative. Didn't have the explosion I think we expected him to have. Now, part of that reason is he got hurt mid-game because apparently all the Pacers get hurt at this point. Unfortunately, they are in probably as poor of an injury situation three games into their season as any team. It's interesting. I remember during the finals, they traded for the pickback. Like, I think it was like either game five or game six between those games. And it seems like that's going to really pay off. Sorry, New Orleans. Not sure why you ended up doing that. But I mean, I guess they were in the finals at the time. Indiana need their pick? But seems like Indiana's going to luck out there and have their pick and kind of get a reset year. similar to probably Boston too, is probably in a similar situation. But Obi Toppin didn't have the game that we all the Wolves fans were fearful of. 9 points, 1 of 3 from three, just kind of it reminds you that just because he was a killer of the Wolves in the past doesn't mean it's going to continue. But I mean, he had 9 points in 17 minutes. If he had played 30 plus minutes, who knows? So just more just putting in there just the brutal Pacers injury luck. Obviously Halliburton's the main one there, but just it stinks. And you read as a fan of really any team, you hope that it's not your team. And it seems like at least one team a year just gets absolutely destroyed by injuries. And luckily the Wolves have really avoided that. And hopefully that continues with Clark and Ant missing games here. But let's move into one of our last segments here. Playtime, where we look around the NBA. Leo, what do we got for our playtime?
We're going to be talking about the thing that everyone loves talking about during any game in the NBA, which is NBA officiating. If you've been keeping an eye on anything that's been going on with the Los Angeles Lakers, which I am constantly surrounded by their fans here, it's a little similar to what they've been doing for many years now. They have LeBron James, they have Austin Reeves, they have Luka Doncic. These are three deadly foul drawing trio that we have in the league. And we're weak into the season, yet they're only, quote unquote, I say only third in total free throws attempted, but they're second in free throw rate. And the amount of free throws that the Lakers take, you know, I want to say is a privilege thing, but I think what really draws my ire and the ire of a lot of fan bases is that their opponents currently right now are 30th in free throws, total free throws attempted and free throw rate. So that's what's really astounding is that like they're getting a ton of fouls, which, okay, sure, you know, Reeves is a great grifter, Luka, you know, talented, whatever. But the fact that you're telling me that they draw this many fouls and they do not commit any fouls on a team that is starting DeAndre Ayton and a slew of other terrible defenders on their team, that they're not committing any shooting fouls, is crazy. You look at Luka Doncic had 21 free throws attempted against Minnesota. He had 19 free throws attempted against Minnesota. Minnesota had 21 total as a team. So it's 19, one player to the team of 21 Minnesota. Austin Reeves had 22 free throws attempted against Sacramento on his own. Sacramento as a team, 18 free throws. Austin Reeves against Portland, 14 free throws attempted. Kind of a low number. Well, guess what? Portland only shot 15 as a team. So, you know, it's something that we saw the refs, do that, you know, is kind of crazy. I think the last thing I'll say about the officiating in relation to the Wolves is that in that Denver Nuggets game, there's a challenge that Chris Finch called that on Peacock. I think it was Grant Hill and Michael Grady on the call. And they were talking about, you know, the review, like, oh yeah, that's definitely like not a foul. Like he was a clean block that he got. And then they blew the call dead. And then they went back, reviewed it. And they somehow went back and said, oh, there was a foul on that second attempt of his, which was well after the whistle. Now I get proximate fouls. I understand how that works. This is not a proximate foul. Like, imagine if a player gets called for a foul, they review it, and then later a player shoots a three, and then Kevin Garnett goes up there and goaltends it. That's like going back and saying, oh, goaltending on Kevin Garnett actually on that shot, which is like, what? The play was already dead. So again, that's something I've never seen done before.
Yeah, that call confused the heck out of me too, because I understand like the imminent possession. That makes sense to me. Like, so on that play, clean block. Technically after the whistle, like the ball, like Jokic had possession of that ball after the non-foul. Like I'm not asked, like I get like the Nuggets should get the ball back instead of like a jump ball situation. But I agree. Like you can't assess a foul that on the original play happened after the whistle, even if it probably was a foul in the second attempt, but like it happened after the whistle. And it's like, what's the line? Where is the line? If it happened minutes after the whistle, that's still kind of, like, no, like, so to me, it's like the minute the whistle blows, you can't add in fouls. I think I honestly think they did not use that rule correctly. And I kind of wrote it down and I'm waiting for a later play this year where basically the exact opposite gets the ruling. But with the Lakers, it's, again, I don't think the league is rigged, and I'm really, I just think it's been a weird thing with them.
Ask Chauncey Billups about that.
Yeah. It's been a weird thing with them because this free throw stuff has been there for multiple years with multiple different rosters. Like going on 3 or 4 years, they've been one of the highest free throw differential teams in the league. And I think the Laker fans will be like, well, we got AD and LeBron. Like, they draw a lot of fouls and they're good at not fouling. It's like, great. The team is doing it again and neither of those two guys are playing.
Right.
Like, it's a weird thing. And I'm more willing to not like call it out and just let it be a weird thing, because I don't think it's like NBA malpractice or whatever, but it's just weird. And I don't know why it continues so often. You can call me naive and give your conspiracy theories, theoretical fan, like, about why it happens, and that's fine. That's your right as a fan, but I don't know. I just let it be weird.
Ryan,
and as far
Ryan,
as the,
we're gonna find go out ahead. On Wednesday, right? We're gonna find out on Wednesday. They play the Lakers tomorrow. So by the time you're listening to this, they're playing tonight. So we're gonna put that theory to the test to say, like, all right.
I guess they're gonna need to guard Reeves without fouling. That's for sure. But right. I will say, there was a refs you suck chant at Target Center on the home opener, and I just thought it was completely unwarranted. The officials were not that bad. I thought they had one incorrect call and a Jaden foul that was, like, annoying. But, like, it was not, like, drastically affecting the outcome of the game. I mean, if you want to play this game, the Wolves had 10 more free throws that night. I'm all for a refs you suck chant when they deserve it. But, like, on the flip side, you got to make sure they deserve it. And I did not think that Indiana game was an example of the refs deserving refs you suck. It was one call. What happened? It was Jaden got called for an annoying call I disagreed with. And then a similar type of foul happened that was an actual foul, but it looked like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a similar type foul, but it was an actual blocking foul by Mike. So, like, the fans got all riled up and I was just kind of like, no, the second one was a foul. The first one, I didn't think so. But, like, just because they missed one call doesn't mean they immediately got to give it back to you. Like, so, yeah. It's an interesting discussion, especially with the Lakers and the reviews. I did remember in the Nuggets game when both teams lost their challenge, I kind of felt like, well, good. I'm kind of over the. I wish the review challenge system was basically only for the last 5 minutes or less. Like, I don't like the challenge system. I think if you want to have it for out of bounds in the middle of the game, where, like, the eye in the sky can just quickly, like, no, out of bounds, wrong way, let's just keep it moving. If you can do that, like, the NFL does that. They have, like, the review assist where they're like,
yeah,
no, that was incomplete. It wasn't a fumble or whatever. Like, if you can do that, that's great. Especially with calls that are like non-judgment calls where it's just like, yeah, the ball hit out of bounds. It was this team's ball. Great. But, like, I don't know. I'm just kind of tired of the reviews. It slows down the game too much. But
it could be long. Yeah. I think when you're talking about, you know, the refs you suck chant, I feel like that's almost the thing that fans are like, we have to do that. That's how we're getting in the game kind of thing. I think it's funny because when you talk about, like, yeah, they didn't do a bad job. They don't deserve it. I think I can agree with you. I didn't get to watch that game live, but in the eternal words of the WNBA commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, once said, hey, I'm a human too. I have a family and I have two kids who could be devastated by these comments. So leave the refs alone. They have families. Okay. No. It's definitely a thing that's always going to be there. Again, I think it's just, I think amid all this, you know, gambling, whether it's poker betting or Terry Rozier gambling on games or whatever, I think officiating and the fact that NBA referees are now wearing, I think, what is it, sound packs and earpieces. It's just like a bad time for all of this to kind of come up. It's kind of creating that storm. And so, you know, why not on Two Words Wolves Pod, we kind of contribute to that discourse just a little bit as well.
Yep. All right. Let's close this out with our two words. My two words, still learning. Kind of said it earlier in the pod. I'm still trying to figure out a lot of aspects of this team. Who's going to, like, what issues are real, what issues are fake, and then the vice versa, what good things are that are happening are real and what are not going well. So my two words are still learning, still trying to figure it out. I think, honestly, like we all should. But yeah, Leo, your two words.
My two words are must win. It is game 5 of the season. Too early for us to be talking about must win games. Well, not for me. All right. This next week and this next 7 calendar days, they get the Los Angeles Lakers on Wednesday without Luka and LeBron. Then they go to Charlotte and at Brooklyn, two of probably the worst teams in the entire league. It is a back-to-back. Brooklyn will be on the end of a back-to-back. So again, there's no reason for the Wolves to drop any of these. So in my opinion, this next week, they must win all three of those games before the schedule picks up. And so I think not having Ant is not a good enough excuse, not for these three teams in their current condition right now. You know, officiating be damned. The Wolves, in my opinion, must win these three games. And I say must win, not that their season's doomed if they lose, but must win in terms of fan sanity and the discourse around the Timberwolves will be capital T-O-X-I-C if they lose more than one or two of these games in this next week. So must win.
Yep. Obviously, must is not the word I would use, but
please
they,
win.
They really, these next three games should be an opportunity to stack up some wins without their best player. But we'll hope and we'll see. I'll have another pod for everyone later this week, either Thursday or Friday. So be on the lookout for that. Otherwise, Leo and I will be back early next week to discuss the Wolves playing out in New York. But for Leo, I'm Ryan. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Get home and drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!